Hi, my name is Aditya, and on the internet, I'm known as the Brukenstein. I am a food technologist by day, an MC, stand-up comedian, a content creator by night. And you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, a conversation with comedian, creator, and consultant, Aditya Kakodkar. Stay tuned. As always, thank you for listening to the show and for sharing and downloading and rating and kindly reviewing. It's very much appreciated, and I'm really quite grateful. I realize that a healthy part of cultural preservation and an even higher intellectual form of cultural evolution comes from truly not taking yourself and that which you consume very seriously. There's actually a lot of community that's built around observing and selecting nuances in the world around you, especially those that tend to make you giggle, or the ongoing nostalgia of present and past people or situations that you can actually share with others because of a common culture. So growing up in the US in a very Marathi household, where the often hilarious observational humor and style of Pu L Deshpande was front and center, it was nice to catch up with Aditya Kakodkar, who's one of many that are propping up language and cultural connection in a unique way through humor and sketch comedy. Aditya is a food technology consultant by day and has been an MC and trivia event host by night for many years. But lately he's been recognized for his online presence, where he's known as Marathi Kaka or Brukenstein, as like me, he likes beer. More than anything else, his very catchy humor on everything from learning Marathi with all of its quirks and translations, to perfect Puneri takes on life, to the painful yet necessary sarcasm of Maharashtrians both in India and abroad, have all taken on a life of their own and are living rent-free in our heads, as the kids say. I was able to catch up with Aditya to chat about it all, from Marathi Kaka musings, to bad dad jokes, to the surprises he gets when meeting people who appreciate his work. But you know, we started out with the obvious question that challenges all global Marathi speakers every day. Do you say fantastic or do you say fantastic?
I haven't gotten to the fantastic part yet. I am still in the fantastic, but maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, I do like the alphabet thing.
Yeah.
The pronunciation of different English words by Marathi people.
Yeah.
And pho and pho is going to be in the next few
in
days.
Next
I've already
months.
Written the script.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a lot of pho becomes pho.
Oh, no.
And there's a difference between pho and pho. So the difference between that.
I can't wait. Well, now, and then, so those are a lot of English words. What about something as simple as, is it Varan Bhat or is it Varan Bhat?
It is Varan Bhat.
Good. I think we can carry on then. That's good. So it's not vada pav. Yeah. Is it vada pav or is it vada pav?
It's vada pav.
Excellent. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I've seen that you do, there are some real great, I think, you know, tickling moments, right? Like, because we certainly in the West have a completely different vantage point about this, right?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, like I promise, at least in my stylings here, I'm not going to do any, you know, as you put it, you know, tune 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 me itka ganai karnar.
Hey, you've been following a few videos in
oh,
the past.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, I do have one. I have one Marathi joke for you. Okay. So
okay. How
do you translate this into Marathi? Okay, this is the English, and tell me, do you know how to translate this into Marathi? So the English phrase is, I died in dramatic fashion.
I died in dramatic fashion. Wow, dramatic, the word dramatic.
And so the answer is melodramatically.
Ah!
I think that I'm going to leave it at that. That's it for me.
I mean, thus proving your worth as a dad joke connoisseur.
Yes, that is true. That is proving my worth as a dad joke. You know, we can sit here and talk for hours probably about this kind of thing, but do you ever get to the point where you have way too many things to possibly make a sketch on or write about? Or actually, do you come to points where you have creative blocks? You know, almost like a, you know, like a real, you know, kind of writer's block, or a, I mean, I hate to put it this way, but it's kind of a creative constipation.
I do. In fact, about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I was going through one. Usually what I do is an idea can strike you at any time. I mean, whether I'm traveling or I'm driving or listening to a podcast or something like that, and something, you know, oh yeah, I can make something out of this. And what I do is, if an idea strikes me, I either write it down as a note on my phone. And once I come home, I write it down on my whiteboard. So I've got a content idea whiteboard and everything. I'd like some 10 odd ideas on the board. And even though I had ideas, I was like, I don't know what to do with these ideas. Like, there was a legit writer's block. I mean, I could stare at those ideas, and those guys are questioning me, do you really think this is a good content piece? Do you think this is worthy of putting it out there? In the moment you were traveling, where you were in that scenario, maybe it was funny, but once you've put it up on the board, it doesn't seem that funny. Then you start questioning that slippery slope of, am I even funny? Should I be even doing this and everything?
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it does get to a very weird place at times. At times there are content pieces that are put up just because, you know what, let me see, what is the worst that can happen?
Right, it's an experiment.
Yeah, a few people might unfollow. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But it's experiment out there. Let me see if I do something away from the norm. What happens? What doesn't? At times there are content pieces I myself don't believe in, where I don't know if this is good enough, maybe,
yeah.
But I'll put it up, and then boom, 100K views.
Right.
I'm like, okay, how did that happen?
Yeah.
The thing is, what I realized is I can get a content writer's block, but there are a lot more ideas out there.
Yeah.
So what I've started doing, and what I used to do also, is I've started putting them in content buckets of sort. Like what goes on Instagram, what goes in my live shows,
right,
what goes on in sketches and everything. So if it's a throwaway joke, I can put it either in a sketch or I can put it up in a stand-up show or something like that.
Because, you know, you say that, like, look, you could be listening to something, you could be observing something, you could be traveling, you could be doing nothing, an idea sort of strikes you. Is it likely important? And in fact, it's almost necessary to have to be a very good listener, to have to be a very good observer in order to succeed in this particular craft.
Considering my humor is observational humor, yes.
Right.
So that's not like something you also have to do. That's a necessity.
It's a necessity. Well, and by the way, do you have to practice that? Is that something that you have to like be keen on, or is it something that naturally has come to you?
I've been married for 4 years, so it became naturally.
All right.
I mean, the one task that we husbands do really well is listening. Yes. Whether we act on it or not is a different topic altogether.
Yeah, boy, that's another podcast. Yeah.
But it took me time. It took me time. I mean, at times when you have an idea in your head, the entire thing is to, oh, I want to put this out there. This is how it should look and everything. I'm like, no, calm down. See what it can be. Listen to what it can evolve into. There are multiple things that you can get inspired by. I mean, most, like I told you, being married and being a good listener in your marriage, lot of content right there.
Oh yeah, that's gold right there, right? But I mean, you know, I'm imagining your wife is probably a sounding board for this, and probably is able to have some, you know, kind of vetting process.
So the thing is, I do include her in a few of the content pieces that she does. And she truly is not a sketch actor or something like that. So her philosophy is, if I can't do it in one take, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So then
yeah.
I have to write it perfectly. So if I have to write it perfectly to a point where, I mean, that helps me practice. Now, that's the one thing about marriage where, you know, they can tell you the reality, like, oh, this is crap. I mean,
right.
this is truly crap.
No, there's no filter. And then you get, yeah.
There's no filter yeah. and there's no gray area. It's either yeah. black or white.
Right.
It becomes easier that way because you have a critic in the house itself. So you can shape it up better.
I was going to say that I imagine also that, like, it's when you're doing observational comedy, it's probably very healthy, especially in the content creation space, that you do have to tap into trends, right? I think I saw recently a video piece that you made where I think is a guy named Ori, who's saying different things, and then you capitalize, said, hey, look, these are all the different Marathi names. I mean, so in that yeah. way, is timing also important in a way?
A lot. I mean, so I'll give you this thing. Sometimes luck plays a part. For example, I did have the sketch ready, but I didn't think it was ready.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know ki, I mean, how do I put it across better? And then this wonderful concept of Mr. Ori comes into the picture,
right,
and
right.
who's like trending right now,
yeah.
and he's all over the place.
Yeah.
All over everyone also in the photos.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, nothing like it. Just let's just jump on this
yeah.
and see.
Yeah.
And then it worked successfully. That's
right.
It's just went from there.
And
I was like, okay.
I mean, I imagine that, like, okay, look, there's a trend to jump on or one to hold off on. Like, that kind of instinct probably at some point is one that you develop over time. But then at the same time here, how do you know if you and when your work stays relevant? At some point there, you know, you work in the food technology industry, so data is always, you know, important. But, you know, at some point, how do you know that your work is both relevant, and then how does it stay relevant?
From what I have realized in this, I don't do the intense data analytics that a lot of people do to understand whether what content piece is working and what it's not, when is it not. I'll tell you quite honestly, I mean, I'm going to anger a lot of my own marketing people and marketing peers.
Right.
But 80% of it is still gut feeling. Like, in the end, your intuition, your gut tells you, let's hold off on this. No, let's go ahead with this. And even if you go ahead with the content piece, suppose,
yeah.
and it does not work. But I mean, what are the metrics of not working? Okay, it's not got 1,000 views or whatever. I mean, XYZ views, you know. That in itself, I take it as a learning on saying, hey, let's see where all it did not work. What was bad in it? Was the hook bad? Was the reasoning bad? If there are less shares, was the relatability bad? Was it something that people do not look for? So that gives me a learning. So I still rely on the gut feeling. I know a lot of
data enthusiasts. Yeah,
I am a data enthusiast. I'm a marketing guy myself, and I'm like, sometimes you just know, especially when it comes to my own content.
Well, that's where the instinct comes
yeah.
in, right? You know.
Yeah, that's where my instinct comes in, saying, you could hold on to this, or you know what, just because you want to put across a content for this week or something, just put it across. Let's see how it performs. It performs brilliant. If it doesn't perform, that's fine. I mean, again, I am not selling a product right now. I mean, it's just content creation for me. It becomes a brand, but I'm not actively invested in it. I have not put in the money. For me, making content is not about putting in money, and you know, I don't have like a high production value. For me, it's very simple. If it works, if it doesn't, it's okay, man. Just move on.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with Aditya Kakodkar. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, this is Vidya Balan, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi, this is Farhan Akhtar.
Hi guys, I'm Ananya Pandey.
Hi, this is Madhuri Dixit, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Aditya Kakorkar.
And so, you know, when you take that same kind of feeling, right? If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it works. You know, tike, you know, salta. Obviously, you can't necessarily take that kind of ethos back to your day job. So my question is that, like, if you think about it, you know, do you have crossover? I mean, does the work that you do as a content creator bleed into your work as a consultant or in food technology and vice versa for that matter? Or are you kind of, you know, really, really disciplined about keeping those lanes very separate?
There's a very smooth transition of sorts. So I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
As a consultant, I not only help develop products and systems. For some brands, I help them help develop their marketing strategies also.
Yeah.
So I work along with a marketing agency where we help develop marketing strategies. And I usually handle the food and the bevs and everything.
Right.
And then comes my own content creation. So it's like a spectrum of sort.
Yeah.
It's like a light spectrum. Where the product development is at one place, slowly transitioning into marketing
right.
You know, different brands, and then is my content creation.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say there are walls, there are borders of sort, but I know where the transition is. I can't skip from food technology to you know, content creation,
right.
That jump.
Yeah.
But there's a transition that happens. And luckily so far, I've been able to, you know, keep it at that. I mean, if I need to tap into my technical resources when I'm pitching something for a brand advertisement or something like that, I can do that in my food technology bit.
Yeah.
If I want to tap into my creativity, I can do that.
Yeah.
So I can, like I say, I keep it in buckets.
Right.
Whenever whatever is needed, you extract that from that particular bucket. So luckily, I've been able to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a smooth professional Indradhanusha. If you will.
Yeah, kind of a thing. Okay. Yeah. It's basically like, it's exactly like that. Yeah.
Let me ask you a kind of more content related question then. So what's more complicated, Pune math or bringing a Marathi or being a Marathi kaka at a Marathi wedding?
Marathi kaka at a Marathi wedding. That Marathi Kaka at a Marathi wedding was a content piece I had done way back in 2020 when I first started making content. And at that time, I mean, I barely had like 1,500 followers. So I really believed in that content and I was like, you know what, more people need to see that. So I basically evolved it. Like I just added a few things and everything. And I was like, you know what, here, this is what the new piece is. And Pune Math was again a part of a trend. You know, on the internet, it's like the girl math, boy math and everything. And Pune math is, I would say, a generic observation about the city of Pune. Wedding kaka is a very specific observation.
And I like for Pune math how you, in the same piece, were able to blend both traffic and dating at the same time. So,
oh, yeah.
So that's a must.
I mean, it's kind of become the same thing right now, Pune. Everything is congested. So.
That's true. Yeah. Good so, one. Let me ask you this. I mean, you know, some of these things are personas, right? So they're characters that are just kind of part of your personality. It doesn't take a whole lot of work for you to really share or portray them. And so, you know, are there some of these things, whether it's Marathi Kaka or some character that makes it into your stand-up routine, you know, do you find that these are just elements of your personality that have always been there, but now they're just coming out in the form of a sketch?
I think I'll take this exact question back to your first question about observation. These are not personalities inside me. These are personas inside me. So these are recorded observations of people that have kept in some part of their brain inside. And when I see that observational pattern, I was like, okay, this person goes into this part of the brain, belongs to this category. It's like the MCU inside my head.
Yeah.
Like this is a particular, Tony Stark type, character. This is a particular Captain America type character.
Yeah.
I hope you, Marvel doesn't sue you for using this.
I hope not. Yes. let's put it this way. This is a, you know, Kaka who's in, on the train or.
Yes. This is a typical, I'll make it better. A Kaka from Pune, a Kaka from Bombay, a Kaka from Kolhapur, a Kaka from.
Not that I don't like the Marvel characters, but this is even better. Yeah.
But Disney is too rich.
That's
so
right. Yeah.
We can't risk it.
That's right.
But we just have to, you know, we just categorize this in my head. And according to whenever I want to put across a content piece, I just tap into that and deliver it that way. Not just Kaka. I mean, these are your friends also who behaved like these, especially in Pune. I mean, even a kid of like 6 years old will say, "Arey, he's una Pune rahila nahi," and all. I mean, it's one of those. So it's that typical behavioral trait that you categorize and put it into your head. And whenever that is to be displayed, it just comes out from there. So these are the characters that I've developed and kept in, and whenever they want to come out, they do. Simple as that.
Do you find that some of these are better suited for making a sketch and perfecting it and crafting it versus something that just comes naturally impromptu when you are in a stand-up routine or on stage or trying to, you know, in fact, even just sharing conversation with friends? Are there some situations that you're like, nope, this is the kind of character or persona that I really, really need to share in the studio versus in a live format? Or do you try and practice both?
Yes, all of this is exactly how you said it. Like, I have I do two kinds of live shows. One is a proper stand-up show, and one is I do trivia nights with the crowd. So where there's a lot of scope for improv comedy and general crowd engagement, crowd. And nowadays in India, crowd roasting is a thing. So, you know, roasting a particular person, it's fun. It's all done in jest. So I have to have those multiple personalities there. And for example, for a reel, there's a typical character that I play. For stand-up, there's a different avenue that I choose because I've not yet introduced the character of Kaka on stage. Maybe in the future I might, but right now I'm very, very, very new in stand-up. So I'm just trying to explore what my persona is because stand-up comedy is very, very difficult in the sense that you have to have your stage persona intact. I mean, to a point where some people take their stage persona, make it their own persona so that nobody catches them off guard ever. So that kind of thing. I mean, there's a huge commitment to it. When it's live, it's a different thing. When I'm with my friends, it's a different thing. So all these segments of humor are completely different depending on the company. When I'm with my wife, I can't do particular jokes because then I'll be sleeping on the couch.
Right.
So that's with company, everything shifts and changes accordingly.
You know, many people assume perhaps, and maybe unfairly, that people who are content creators, people who are comfortable as moderators or hosts or people who are doing stand-up comedy or do a live show, that they naturally are extroverts. Would you say that's somewhat true for you? Or in fact, are you someone who craves privacy and craves, you know, when you're not creating something, are you someone who is a little bit more insular and quiet?
I would say it's the opposite for me. I mean, in the sense I'm not an introvert at all. I think I got into content creation and more stage shows and all because I'm extrovert. Because again, go back to your first question. It's observation, listening, hearing. And if you're not truly an extrovert person, I mean, there's a misconception about extrovert people that, oh, they are the only ones who talk all the time and everything. No, I mean, extrovert is a person who is in a social setting, taking record of whatever is happening. They're in the buzz, they're in the party kind of a thing. That does not mean they're ignoring people. They're just putting across their point or something like that. So for me, I'm that kind of an extrovert where even though I am in a party, I might be parting my guts out, and but I'm still listening, and I'm kind of the class clown also. I mean, I am clowning around all the time. In school, it was the exact opposite. I was not particularly the class clown. I was the one who got bullied, but hey, bullying let me become a better comedian, I guess.
So, I guess so, yeah. So
that's the thing. But yeah, I've always been an extrovert. In fact, I find it very, I get scared when I'm sitting alone, that kind of thing. Where, yeah. Because then again, what I do is I start going into the thing ki chalo abhi likhne. So yeah. I cannot sit still for a second. I mean,
yeah.
if you see me sitting still or lying down, I'm like doing something, writing something,
right.
Or something is working in my head.
Yeah, your thoughts are working. You're constantly, thinking about, the next sketch perhaps or something
exactly.
that actually is about to do. But then when you think about what you do, right, which is, so cultural, it has such an importance in some way in preserving language. So I'm curious for you, do you have a sense in that way, not just a responsibility to your own sketches and to your comedy, but do you feel like there's a sense of responsibility to Marathi language, Marathi culture, Marathi life for that matter? And by the way, I don't necessarily mean a specific Marathi culture, a specific Marathi life, but for that matter, just the observations of Pune itself could be a proxy for some kind of Marathi culture and language.
So it's as simple as this. This language is my means of communication. And I find it to be a very fun thing to have around. I mean, I'm no language expert. I'm not even from a Marathi medium school. I'm from an English medium school. My Marathi in school was limited to that 100 marks paper and whatever interaction happened at home. So I never thought ki it was my responsibility towards the language or something. It's just that I love the language. I mean, I absolutely have been mesmerized by the words in it and the sentences in it and the entire culture around it. It's kind of like, hey, this language gave us something. It's just my way of, spreading amongst other people. Like most of the people in my comment section or the viewership are people who aren't Marathi. And they keep asking me, can you translate this for me? And can you help me understand this better? So that is where that entire concept of, in Marathi, we don't say vagare, vagare, vagare. That just started. And then it became from how Marathi people are, like in Marathi culture, wagera wagera. Like in Marathi, Marathi people are so XYZ and, this is how we speak and everything. So it came from a point where, hey man, people need to know the beauty of this language. I mean, considering Maharashtra is the state with the highest number of immigrants and immigrants who are willing to be a part of the culture, they want to understand the language, they want to learn the language. And I'm just another guy who's helping them out in a very funny manner. I mean, there are people who come up to me and say out just the words zanzanit and kuskushit and everything just because I'd done a video long back. They're like, yeah, now we know what zanzanit means. So even having that impact on one person is a lot for me. Okay. Someone who did not know the word now is using that word or something like that. And that's in a way spreading the language kind of thing.
What's interesting about that is for someone like me, who I don't get a chance to hear Marathi very often. I mean, when I'm with family, if I'm actually around or if I'm making it, it's an effort to have to do that, right? So when I hear something, in some ways, the responsibility is in some ways kind of like maximizing that secret, right? I mean, you can't completely have a way to translate some words. Like, how do you translate a word like jakas? Or how do you actually see, there's so many different facial expressions when it's like gapre, right? Like that.
Yeah, exactly.
The things that you do in your work are really kind of like, in some ways, kind of harnessing all of those different things. Because for someone like me, they're a secret. And they sort of are my way and your way of connecting in that way. And that's when we were talking about earlier, this like, you know, tura he sagra vichitra vatat asel. But in a way, that's exactly what connected you and I together.
Yeah. But that's the thing, you know. You use the word secret. Funny enough, I don't think it's a secret, because how much ever content I put out there like this, there are going to be a few internal jokes in Marathi, which even if I put out there, people are not going to understand.
Right.
That's going to be very core Marathi. I mean, that's a typical Marathi behavior. Like I've written a sketch on this also. I haven't put it up yet, but it's like Satyanarayanachi katha. And how everyone has an expert take on everything that is happening. And it's very much like that, you know. Satyanarayanachi katha might be something, a story that is giving you XYZ moral. But unless that Guruji tells you what that moral, everyone's interpretation of that is different. Completely different. Some might say, you know, that the story is about honesty. Some might say, no, the story is about, you know, being philanthropic. The story is about, you know, revenge, whatever. So that is the interpretation. So for me, it's exactly like that. Whenever I put out a content piece, like I had done that Satyanarayanachi katha only, that the piece is out there, but everyone is interpreting it differently until the Guruji. So that was the sketch. So a concept like Satyanarayanachi puja is very Marathi. Only Marathi people will understand that. Or it's kind of like an internal joke that we have. Because, I mean, in my opinion, Satyanarayanachi katha, the Bhadji who does that, the raps better than Eminem does. I mean, he's the true rap god in that sense.
Right.
Because,
yeah.
It's true. Because he's just racing through it. It's not even a katha at that point. It's just a shariat. So it's hilarious. But those things are going to be very Marathi for us. Those things are still going to be an internal joke between us. So how much ever content and how much ever secrets we spill, people, a few things will always be core Marathi. Will be very, like, I wouldn't say a guarded secret, but it's going to be like an internal joke between us kind of a thing.
So I guess, like, the person, the Marathi kaka, like, let's say the guy who's at the wedding, who's complaining that, like, you know, hey, guy, this is not traditional. Askal ashekartat, you know, whatever that might be, right? So at some point, a lot of these kind of, you know, guarded secrets, if you will, you know, Satyanarayanachi katha, there may be a day when someone actually says, no, you know what, I'm only going to read half of it. Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is that, is this your way of saying, hey, look, at some point you can decide and determine how you want to interpret it, but are there some things that are, hey, these are absolute boundaries? Like, you can't cross a line with this, or is everything at some point going to evolve?
I truly believe everything evolves. I truly believe everything evolves. I usually don't try to put boundaries on content, but I stay away from political content, considering the political nature of everything in the world right now, not just, you know, in India. It's everywhere in the world. You put up anything remotely political, there's going to be factions. There are two factions fighting against each other for no reason. And I don't want to be the cause of it. I mean, you can fight on your own time. Like, Twitter was created just for that. Go, enjoy there. That's why I try to keep it light. I mean, I stay away from political topics like those. But for me, I truly believe, like, I want to give Marathi kakas the credit. I mean, they do realize that they're funny in their hypocrisy also. I mean, a Marathi kaka will look at this and laugh because his kaka used to do the same, not realizing he's the kaka.
That's right.
It's
a full circle.
It's a full circle. So for me, it's a win-win kind of a situation, because someone from an elder generation, from a boomer generation, will be like, haha, amche kaka ashes hote. Nahi kaka, he tumi ahat. This is how you are. But I do genuinely feel Marathi people do have that sense of humor. I mean, we come from a culture of Pula Deshpande, and I mean, that person is a genius of observational comedy, and he's pulled legs throughout his career. And we can laugh at ourselves. I genuinely believe Marathi people can laugh at ourselves. And that's why I think, I mean, the more evolution happens, I mean, it's going to be easier. I mean, one of the top content creators in the country right now are Marathi. So that's kind of credit, because if you can laugh on yourself, you can be a good comedian.
Right.
That's what my take is.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with comedian, creator, and consultant Aditya Kakodkar. Stay tuned. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Cal Penn. I'm an actor, author, former public servant, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tam France.
Hi, I am Rahul Mishra.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's come back to our conversation now with Aditya Kakodkar. Let me finally ask you this. You know, you mentioned Pula Deshpande, you mentioned, you know, there are other great content creators out there. For you specifically, this is kind of a question that I wonder about a little bit, in that, A, how do you define success? Like, what does that actually look like when you're a doctor, when you're a consultant, et cetera? You know, your success is that your patients are healthy, you know, your consultant, your project has been completed, et cetera. But in this space, in the artistic space, in the content creation space, how do you define success? That's one thing. And then the second thing is that when someone comes and either watches you live or is seeing your content, what so far, when people actually meet you, what do you think they're most surprised by?
The first question is kind of difficult, I'll be quite honest, because I never put a metric to success, quite honestly. I mean, what is success in that sense? I mean, it becomes like a philosophical question in that sense, because content creation is
You know, so like people would define Pula Deshpande as being successful, right? But
yes, how do you measure how successful a person was? I mean,
right.
I'm not doing this for awards, or I'm not doing it for, I don't know, Padvi or something like that. I mean, for me, it's just continue. I mean, what I feel, and it's going to sound so tacky and philosophical right now, but success comes at the destination, and this is a journey which doesn't really have a destination of sorts. I mean, I make content because I like doing it, and it just happens. That's fine. I mean, I don't know what to say. I have 10 million followers now, I'm successful. Great. So do 100 other people. How are you standing apart? Is everyone successful in that sense? Do you mean everyone who's not had a million followers is less successful? No, they are successful in their own way. I mean, I feel the definition of success shouldn't be one. I mean, I think it's an individual success, and I don't know. I'm really struggling to give an answer to this.
And the truth is that I'm not sure if there is an answer for that one. And the truth is that, you know, I wonder if, in fact, as you mentioned, like not having a definition to that itself is a success, right? I mean, that's the first hurdle to recognize and realize that there isn't a great definition.
Yeah, because there's no
that.
End point. For example, I'll give you this. When I started this content creation thing, I had not manifested, but written in one of my sketches that by November 2023, 50,000 followers, something like that. And when I actually reached 50,000 followers, I was like, oh, nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Okay, that's just a number.
Right.
I mean, nothing. Just, there was no.
Happened. Yeah.
Yeah, it happened. So there was no dynamic shift, or there was no, you know, suddenly 50,000 people waiting for me outside or something like that. No, it just happened. And then the same thing happened at 100K. I mean, it just happened. I mean, okay, good. But what next? What do I look for 500K when 500K will happen? Okay, 1 million will happen. Do I start feeling differently? Do I start making better content suddenly? No, it's the same thing that I'm going to do. So numbers are not it. Numbers are not success. Yeah. I have internalized myself.
Yeah.
Like that I've realized, okay, this is not a metric on which I want to measure success. Now, what do I want to measure success? Then the question comes, why do I want to measure success at all? So let it be. I mean, you're enjoying doing what you're doing. Just enjoy. Why think about what the word should be attached to it?
I guess I'll also add then. So in a way, I'll ask you this, right? I mean, for some people, right, having some kind of definition to this, in fact, is a motivator, right? You go from point A to point B to point C. Having these milestones, in fact, give people different drive.
Yeah, it drives them.
Right? So, yes, I mean, does that ever make you feel like, look, you have to be a pretty self-motivated, self-assured, confident person to be able to live in this kind of world?
I'll be very honest. Again, I truly believe every person's perspective is unique on this. If I don't have a definition of success, and if you do, suppose, I mean, you're a doctor and you have like XYZ kind of a thing. And I'm not going to crap on that. Saying, you believe in success. Yeah. Such a moron. I'm not going to do that. I mean, your definition of success is legit to you. What I'd be against is you measuring my success based on your parameters.
Right, of course.
What you define as success might be different to what I define as success. Or I might not define success at all. So I do not, I mean, for people who believe that these milestones work, I completely back them. I completely support them. That is your motivator. Awesome. You work on that motivation. For me, that's not a motivator. For me, putting sales target or marketing targets is not a motivation. For me, it's understanding what is required and understanding how it goes through. For me, I mean, that's why the entire thing of success stories and everything, but that's a personal take. I wouldn't meet, to say it in Marathi, me ekonar ladranar nahi. I wouldn't put it on someone else to, you know, follow my rules of what success means or something like that. In the end, it's Satyanarayana Chikatha. Everyone's got a perspective.
It all comes back to Satyanarayana Chikatha. So in the end, when people do meet you and they get a feel for who you are, what do you think they're most surprised by as they get to know you better or get to know your content better?
So a lot of people approach me and, hey, you're that person and all.
Right.
And I'm like, yes, I am. And now I've started doing this gimmick where I say, I'm not, but a lot of people come and ask me whether I'm that person. Who is this person? Can I see this
That's
person?
That's right. Yeah.
And a lot of people get confused. He looks exactly like you. I'll show you. So that's the thing. So I've started doing this gimmick. That's the one thing I love doing when people come to me. I mean, I actually like to talk and engage with them a lot because, hey, I mean, if they are not the ones supporting your content, who really are you doing it for, kind of a thing. And a lot of people approach, take a selfie and everything. And I think the one thing that they find surprising is I talk a lot with them also, try to understand where they are from. And because primarily a lot of people come up to me and say, oh, you're that celebrity. I'm like, first of all, I hate the word celebrity. Don't say celebrity. Then they say, I'm a big fan of yours. I'm like, again, fan is not a word I like. Please do not say fan. You just say, I like the content you make and I follow it. It's amazing. I'm good. That's enough. But don't use the word fan. Fan as a word has a very negative connotation where someone is on a pedestal and you're down. And I absolutely hate that term. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't sit well with me when someone says they're a fan.
You want a level sort of like community.
Yes. I've always been into more of a community perspective and everything. So I would rather, you know, share a drink with you, sit down with you, understand what you also do and everything. And a lot of people get surprised by the fact that, hi, I'm interested in their life also. Because they pretty much think that they're watching me 24/7 do things. And for them, it is like, oh, but why is he interested in my life? I'm like, no, because you are human. I mean,
yeah.
I think a lot of people get surprised by the fact that I interact with them that much in real life also, where, hey, I want to know what you do, what's up with you, and XYZ. So I think that they get surprised by that fact. And a lot of people very sheepishly ask, can we take a selfie? I'm like, I'm not a big persona where you have to take permission, man, and take a photo. So I think that's what surprises them.
I think getting to know your content, knowing that you're human, and knowing that you love engaging with people in a community is hopefully something that people keep coming back to over and over again. Aditya, what an awesome treat to share a conversation with you. I hope we can do this again in the future. Thank you so much for joining.
Yes, for sure. Thank you. Thank you so much, Abhay.
Thanks, Aditya. Boilermakers next time. And please check out Aditya, also known as Brukenstein, also known as Marathi Kaka, online. By the way, we're Marathi, so we don't just agree with you, mock you, celebrate you, say goodbye, or maybe even leave you hanging. We just say, bar, huh, bar. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.